The following program may contain difficult or triggering subject matter. Listener discretion is advised. CJAM 99.1 FM programming is hosted almost exclusively by community volunteers. The views and opinions expressed on the following program are that of the host and their guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of CJAM FM. For more information and resources, visit our website at cjam.ca.
Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's HandyLink. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells. This first interview contains mature subject matter, so listener discretion is advised. In this segment of our show, we'll hear a story of how PTSD and depression became an advocacy effort for young children. So if you could introduce yourself and share a little bit of your mental health journey.
So, my name is Sierra Lee Levine, and I am an advocate, as well as a childhood sexual abuse survivor. And it's been a long journey with my mental health. So I wasn't properly diagnosed, as is quite common in Black families in particular. Mental health is not something that is so easily discussed. And it wasn't until I was 22 that I took it upon myself to make an appointment with the doctor and start looking into what's going on with me.
So, once you got your diagnosis, did you find there were a lot of supports available, or did you have to push a little bit to...
I had to push, because this is especially the time, it was 2007 at this time, so mental health was still, it's not even that great these days. It's come a long way, but no, there wasn't enough resources. I had to definitely push and find it myself. I was basically just given the diagnoses and ushered out the door.
So, kind of like medical science on the assembly line plan, see how many we can diagnose and get out in an hour.
Right. Oh, of course they've made sure to give me a prescription. But that was about it.
So, that brings up an interesting point. Do you have any advice for those out there who are just starting their mental health recovery journeys?
Don't be scared to speak up for yourself, and don't feel like you're the only one who's going through it. I know when you're in the midst of a manic depression episode, or you've isolated yourself away from your friends, it's hard not to feel alone, because in a lot of cases you are, but there are plenty of like-minded people. This is one of the areas where social media is great, because you can go on Facebook, for instance, and find a group of people. Like, one of my diagnoses is borderline personality disorder. So I was able to find a group of people who had that. So just find your tribe.
So, I understand you've been doing some work to advocate for those who might be undergoing the same thing you did as a child. You've been doing a push for that.
Yes, so I'm starting, it's a movement, it's called the Butterfly Movement. Butterflies, because they represent transformation, and they were the favorite insect of one of the children who I'm advocating for. What it is we are looking to get Canada behind us on looking into the laws that pertain to childhood murder, childhood abuse. As you know, in Canada, we have a life sentence, but that's 25 years. And I, as a survivor, would like to see that changed. I think it's time that we open the discussion that I know we as a community, we as a society like to believe in a good happy ending, a good redemption story, but I think we need to accept that not everybody can be redeemed, nor should everybody be given the chance. And I think when it comes to someone who chooses to take the life of a child, there should be no discussion about day parole and that type of sentence.
So, to change gears a little bit, in your recovery journey, has there been any success moment or anything that's proven especially helpful as a coping strategy to help you become stronger as you face it and help these children going forward?
Definitely just dropping bad habits. So for a long period of my life, I used alcohol as a way to cope. I had to get a grip on that and start looking at why I was drinking. And going to childhood sexual survivor groups with other women who had been through it, I find that was very pivotal in me starting to unravel everything that was going on in a healthy way.
So, what are the next steps in your journey?
I've begun meditation. I've begun yoga. The sort of cliche healthy avenues, but they do really work. Focusing on the butterfly movement, I find channeling my history into something positive has really motivated me to stay away from over drinking. And it's really given me hope to be able to have made it through and to want to extend my knowledge and my experience and my empathy and my understanding is what's going to keep me going. That's my next step.
So, if you could send any message to those in power about the need to be there for those survivors and to be there with mental health supports, what would you want them to know?
That I understand that mental health and childhood sexual abuse and just abuse in general is a very difficult topic, and it's very hard to find the source. So it's kind of become the way of life to sort of focus on the victim, but in the wrong way. I think we need to start focusing more on the perpetrators and relinquishing their rights a bit more. It seems to be very, we don't really know what the problem is, so we just kind of are going to deal with it like X and Y, but
I think honestly, it begins with that honest discussion, knowing what actually happened and the feelings of the survivor.
Right, because the extended families are also left in the case of, you know, when a child has been murdered or victimized, it trickles to everybody. And they now have mental health issues that maybe they didn't have before or have been exacerbated. And I think we need to look at the message we're sending when we are only seemingly punishing these people for a short amount of time. I think the long-term effects it has on everybody else is almost like a sacrificial lamb.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yeah.
This next interview is a post-dated one, so some of the events referred to may already have passed. In this segment of our show, Sandy Bernstein will be telling us a little bit about DRDC. So if you could introduce yourself and tell me a little bit about your work advocating for persons with disabilities, that'd be great.
Sure. My name is Sandy Bernstein, and I'm the legal director here at Disability Rights DC at University Legal Services. Disability Rights DC, or DRDC as we call ourselves for short, is the protection and advocacy program for people with disabilities in the District of Columbia. Under federal statute, every state and territory in the United States have a protection advocacy program that receives federal funds, but is not part of the federal government, to provide advocacy and legal representation to people with disabilities, with the focus on addressing discrimination, rights violations, and ensuring that people with disabilities are not abused and neglected.
So, what are some of the most common challenges in terms of discrimination, and how do you go about providing advocacy so persons with disabilities can be fully included?
Well, we do outreach in all different areas to make sure that people in D.C. are aware of our services. With our authority as the Protection Advocacy Agency, we have the power to enter facilities and places that typical attorneys can't enter. For example, we can get into nursing homes, psychiatric hospitals, group homes, state programs, the local D.C. jail, and we can provide information both on people's rights and the services that we can provide. So we get a lot of information, and we get a lot of people who reach out for information through those means. We also have people who just contact us, who call us, and are seeking legal assistance that way. But we try to reach people that a lot of other attorneys can't reach. People in psychiatric facilities, people in nursing facilities, people in the D.C. jail who may not be aware of our services and that they have the right to community-based services. And then we do a lot of advocacy in assisting people to get those services. So in the United States, and in D.C., we have something called the Medicaid waiver, which is a way of providing services to people with disabilities outside of an institution. And so we do a lot of work, whether it's people who are living in a facility or they're living in the community and they're not getting, for example, the home health aid services that they need. If they have a physical disability and they need assistance, or they have a psychiatric disability and they need to be to receive services from a mental health provider to be able to live in the community. So we do a lot of work fighting for people to get those services so that they can live in the community, so they can get a job, so that they can get employment supports if they need it. Trying to resolve those issues on the lowest level by writing letters, representing people at meetings, but if needed be, then we will file more formal legal action against the District of Columbia and other places to make sure that people get the supports they need.
So, what are some of the advantages of being able to live and function independently as opposed to institutional settings you mentioned?
I mean, having control over your own life. For people who live in institutions or a place in institution, every minute of their day is not their own. They don't get to decide what to eat, what to sleep, what to wear, who to talk to, when they're going to talk to, when they're going to wake up, when they're going to go to sleep. They don't live their life like the rest of us. And it's really, you know, it's so important. I can't tell you, sometimes I've helped somebody get out of a facility and they're so happy that in the morning they get to decide what they're going to have for breakfast. You know, they get control over their own life. They can have visitors just like the rest of us. And they can be employed. It's a real shame that people with disabilities have such a low employment rate, because really that is so much of how we all determine what is meaningful to us and what value we are and productive, and how productive we are to the community. And so really helping people make connections, reconnect to family, have their own family, get a job, it's really important, and it's their right. The Americans with Disabilities Act was passed so that people could get the services that they need in the community and would not be subject to discrimination, but we still have a long way to go to get us there.
So, in your time advocating for persons with disabilities, is there any success moment or story that stands out for you?
You know, I've been doing this for a long time. I've been at DRDC since 1997, so I've seen I've represented a lot of people. For me, helping people get the services that they need is always the most important on an individual level. Recently, in terms of our systemic work, our office does a lot of systemic work where we're trying to improve the system of services for people with disabilities. And for many, many years, the District of Columbia was one of only us and four other states in the country that did not provide services to adults with developmental disabilities. Who needed more cognitive related supports, or who had individuals who may have who may be autistic, who needed some more services or other developmental disabilities, they only provided services to adults who had an intellectual disability. So if you had a developmental disability that wasn't intellectual, you didn't get any services once you left childhood and left the schools. Through a lot of collaboration and advocacy, and really a lot of advocacy from parents and people with developmental disabilities themselves, we were able to push the legislature, push the government, and legislation was passed just a few years ago that made people with developmental disabilities eligible for services for the first time. So this has been amazing, because before that we had people, just say you have someone who has autism, who has maybe some needs and really needs supports during the day, staffing supports to be able to be successful, or needs long-term supported employment to be able to maintain a job. Before this legislation was passed, they were not able to get that. Through our advocacy and working with other collaborators and family members and people with disabilities themselves, now those people on that population can get services. So we're seeing people who, you know, are able to keep their jobs now, or are able to, you know, they're not ending up homeless. We had people who would end up with criminal charges because they just needed some behavioral supports. And so being able to see that put into action, it's something I personally worked on for about 15 years of my career, trying to get that to happen. It's been so wonderful that people, it shouldn't have taken this long, but it's so wonderful that these services are now available to all people with developmental disabilities. So that's something that I've seen as a great success.
Right. Thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
Thanks. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
If you or someone you know is struggling with mental health or addiction, consider registering to the new REACT program launched by Downtown Windsor Community Collaborative. REACT is a 90-day program committed to understanding your story and supporting your journey to healthy and long-term healing. All sessions are online and completely free, running weekdays from 9 a.m. until noon. Visit reactwindsor.ca and instantly be connected to a safe and supportive community. That's reactwindsor.ca.
In this segment of our show, musician Fraser Newcomb will be telling us a little bit about the impact of his music on veterans with disabilities. So as one who's done a lot of music benefit for returning veterans, I'd imagine you've seen a lot of mental health and concerns along those lines. How does your music support those coming back with things like PTSD or any other disability?
Oh, yeah, well, the music is a great thing. It's a great stress reliever for start with, and it can play a big part in any mental, you know, situation. You know, like I've done shows in Brenton, with the place called the Gummy Camp. That's a place put on by Tim Hedler. It's a big farm, and they have old veterans there, you know, and they come back with PTSD, or whatever you call it, and other issues of all kinds, alcohol, drugs, you name it. And we played up there for them and music, and they were so appreciative of it. And people that can afford it, they donate houses to this farm, to this Tim Hedler, and they have those service dogs that go around and talk to them, you know, they talk to the people and that. We did a big show there for them, and they have a big thing there going, and it's really, really something. It touches the heart when you go there. And that was a few years back now, but I haven't been there lately, so I don't know what it's like.
So what inspired you to reach out to returning veterans and give them your support? I mean, the music.
Well, not only veterans, I reach out to just about anybody I can. Like, for now, I do a lot of work with the up-and-coming music artists. And I take them down to Pigeon Forge, Tennessee, and down to and give them a chance at life, because a lot of people, they're just in the country. And they don't they don't get out, you know, to see everything. And it's kind of a shame because there's a lot of talent around, and this helps them get out there, get on city life, and get going. And working with several of them right now, as a matter of fact, and getting them going. And it takes gives them some, you know, something to live for, and they like it and stuff like that. So I'll help anybody that could possibly like Poppy help, whether it be mental or physical or whatever. You know, if I can do it, I'll do it. So, and I take a lot of joy in doing that. And, you know, it makes me feel good too. So it's good all the way around. It's a win-win situation.
So through your musical efforts and supporting those with disabilities, what sort of response, what sort of benefits have you seen? How have people's lives been changed?
Well, yeah, well, self-satisfaction, and when they show you how much they appreciate what you're doing for them, it gives you a real good feeling that you've accomplished one. You know, if you can save one out of 100 or 1,000, you've done your job pretty much. Like I've had different guys that come back from overseas, we'll call it. And one guy in particular that I was down in, way down the road from me, and he was having issues, and he came back to me after he got my music, and he played my music, and he played it on the radio and stuff, and he came back to me and said, "Frederick," he said, "you saved me." So that really, something like that really makes you feel good. Because that's one guy, and he's doing quite well now, actually, and he's happy and remarried and all that stuff. So you know, it's just things like that make me feel good.
So, if you could send any message to the community about the need to uplift people through music and what can be done by empowering people through your message, what would you tell them?
I would tell them if, you know, music is a great thing to take the stress away. They don't have to be a professional or anything like that. Just pick up an instrument of kind, and if you don't know how to play it, learn how to play it. It doesn't take very much to learn how to play it. And sit down and write some things down on a piece of paper, write your song down if you want, and just play around with it, and you'll find that it just relieves you so much. That you know, that's what everybody I talk to that does music feels that way. Now, if you're a professional, that's different because that you're doing it for a living then. But just for self-enjoyment, just grab a guitar or fiddle or whatever you want, whatever you like to do, and learn how to play it. It'll take you a while, but it'll come. It's easy to learn now. You just go on your computer, pick up, I like to learn it. Play the guitar, and it'll show you all the chords and everything right on there. So it's easy to do, and I think it's a great thing for you. That's what I would, you know, suggest to people.
So, do you find that using music as a means of advocacy for those who are having troubles, be it mental health or physical disabilities, do you find using music is kind of a relatable, kind of a cool way to get the message across?
It certainly is, yes, I fully agree with that, you know, and any type of activity you can do like that, like if you play baseball or bowling, get off your couch and go out and do it. There's all kinds of help out there. There's people, the Disability Channel, Jay will help you out. Just call them up, the Disability Channel, Google it up, and they'll help you a lot. And we're here to help you, and that's what I'm, you know, that's our thing. And we like to help you, whether it be, you know, financial or whatever problems you have. So that's one thing I think you should be done.
Like,
let's help them.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure, no problem.
Friends, PTSD can be the unseen elephant in the room. The fact is, you don't necessarily know when, where, or how it's going to strike. but it is always incumbent upon us as a society to show our support to those affected. For surviving the trauma is one thing. It requires strength and courage and character. However, society must keep an open mind and recognize that the effect isn't gone in a moment. You're not cured in a whirlwind. Fact is, a person coming through PTSD, trying to own their situation, has to find that strength for themselves. Because honestly, it's not something you can just medicate away or give a quick slap of a band-aid on. It's something that goes to the core of a person. And I have the utmost respect for anyone speaking out about their situation, about their trauma, owning it, and trying to protect those who would be affected down the line. When you think of a survivor, you might think of a strong, determined person, but you don't necessarily see the glue that's holding them together. You don't see the supports they use to keep themselves on track and in the moment. Finding your outlet can be a great support, whether it be music or athletics or even higher education. Something to focus on, something to build, something to create, can make all the difference for someone who's been through something like PTSD. And honestly, they have just as much potential, just as much to offer this community as anyone else. Their strength can create beautiful things, even if it's just beautiful opportunities. To channel that, to channel what was meant to be something to tear down these amazing people, and taking it, twisting it into something to better the world, it takes a special kind of heart and an amazing soul. For honestly, we all have our moments of difficulty in life. We all have those scars that the world can't see. But it's a question of how we choose to own them, how we choose to shape with them. I've always maintained any given disability is not a curse, it is not a slight upon a person, it's simply a tool with which you can build beautiful and wonderful things if you know how to use it, if you allow yourself the opportunities in life. And truly, it's also a matter of community. It is a matter of letting in those who would be willing to share in your story. For someone with a mental health concern, it can feel like an overwhelming weight upon the mind and upon the heart. But it is not a weight we must carry alone. It's foolhardy and reckless to think that we are the only ones in the world who understand. We are the only ones who can carry this load. Together, as a people and as a community, we can make these burdens that much easier for each other. The truth is, the question comes down to, how would any of us react given the same situation? Would we choose to shy away from the world? Would we create beautiful music, art, anything that can help with the healing process? And truly, mental health is one of those things where it gets dicey for some disability advocates. They don't necessarily want to accept the things they can't see or hear or readily quantify. Yes, you can see the after effect, but you have to recognize what we carry inside is not something anyone can see, but it is something we must see for ourselves. Being in denial that there are difficult things we have to deal with does not make us strong people. We're not stronger by ignoring the need to treat those wounds of our hearts and of our minds. Talking about it, opening up about it, maybe you'll even find a solution. That sense of community breaks walls. The walls around the heart and around the mind keep a person with a disability from achieving their best. And I maintain there is always hope. There's always a better outcome waiting for such a person. Simply a matter of being able to accept that there are those around who want to make the world a better place. There are those who are willing to say, I have been treated unfairly, I have been hurt, but I am not going to make that the all-defining factor of who and what I am. This has been Handy Link. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.